So the Medicine Buddha stanza and mantra are on the blue sheet if you have the white binder. So let's say the mantra seven times after we say the stanza. Bhagawan, with equal compassion for all, whose name, when merely heard, dispels the suffering of the lower realms, dispeller of disease and the three poisons, I prostrate to Medicine Buddha, lapis light. Teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha. Now let's read the four measurables in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. We'll turn to page 37, and we'll chant the Four Measurables chanting version that's toward the bottom of the page. So if you have the white binder, it's the Tibetan words at the music notes. San chen tam che de wa dam de see two mantras. So let's chant Chenrezig's mantra eight times. He's the Buddha of great compassion. And then Green Tara's mantra seven times, and she's the Buddha of enlightened activity. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani. tare tu tare tu re so ha. Om 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 tare tu tare tu re so ha. Let's see, is there a children's program today? No. Oh, no? Okay.
What we should do? Any questions there? No. What we should do? The frog, what we should do?
Did you have a good vacation?
Huh?
Did you have a good vacation?
Oh, yeah, wonderful vacations. Not vacation, but...
Staycation.
Huh?
We call it staycation.
Yeah, staying home. Yeah, wonderful. So, did you have a good time with George?
Yes.
So, any question from George class? Well, maybe do kadam vasle George phone number. George live in Kali Shalis, Asheville. Just joking. So emptiness. So of course, I also have questions about emptiness. what is the meaning of psychology? Psychology. What psychology means? What is the definition? Am I saying right? Psychology?
Psychology? Study of the mind.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's very good definition. Study of the mind.
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. Psychology. What is the purpose? What is the purpose of studying psychology? What is the purpose? What's the goal? What is the purpose of psychology, or what is the purpose of studying psychology? What is the goal?
I think for many people who study psychology, it's the study of the mind and behaviors, and many people want to understand that in order to help other people. So psychology... then they become psychologists, which sometimes I think...
Psychologist, the person who help other people.
Yes, pretty much, yeah. Try to. So, yeah, it's a little bit different than, I think, the way that we think about it. The Buddhist teachings might think about it. It's slightly different.
How you study mind in the West, how you study the mind in the West, how you study. Can you hear me? Oh, yeah. Huh? What is that? Empirical? What? Can you explain what does that mean?
That's all right. That's fine. Through an empirical approach. So there, you make a series of observations that can be measured, and then those establish a set of truths. I don't use that with big T.
Series of observations through
that
the person that you are helping.
Truth, and then from there you can make other observations and establish other truths. Empiricism. Empirical approach.
It's the
right word.
Based on experience.
Right.
Do scientists believe in psychology? Do scientists believe in psychology or not?
Yeah, it's a materialist's approach. Huh? Yeah. Yeah.
Some scientists do believe in psychology or not? Some.
I just actually read an article. I'll try to find it. I just read an article not that long ago that there are many scientists that are now claiming that the Western civilization has done very little true study of the mind in scientific methods. There was just a huge article that came out that they think the Western civilization has done very little in the true study of mind, mindfulness, and the true meaning of the mind versus the brain.
Oh, very good. So you see here, there's all the books from bottom all the way up, all the way up. All of them there. There are like 300-something volumes. This is like traditional books. It's not like this, This is like traditional books. It doesn't have index. Hard to find. No index. Require a lot of patience to read if you want to find something. So there's long page back and forth. One has number, back there's no number, then another one has number. So that whole page. So this many texts have been written by Shakyamuni Buddha, and many texts are like commentaries from Indian, you could say nowadays, modern day, you could say PhD doctor, such as Nagarjuna, Asanga, Chandrakriti, Dignaga, they wrote so many commentaries. So in the text, in those texts did not mention this term, but His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, as most of you know, think all the time, great thinker, said all these texts can be divided into three categories. One section probably is Buddhist religion. One section is like psychology. One section is like mental science. So before 1959, nobody ever thought like that. But this three term does not mention in the teachings that His Holiness come up with these ideas. All the teaching can be divided into three categories. Every Sunday here, last 20 years, every Sunday here, I was very happy to hear that, that from His Holiness Dalai Lama. So every Sunday, last 20 years, here at the Kadamba Center, whatever I said, I never used psychology, but whatever I said is pretty much philosophy or psychology. There's very little about religion, Buddhist religions. That's how all the class been taught here in the last 20 years. Wednesday night, then it's focused on religious part of the text. Wednesday night we have class, then focus more there. Sunday, pretty much like psychology or mental science. That's now that's why I choose to explain this what you call mind training text. This is the book, you could say, is the kind of book that explains the meaning of psychology. Kind of explain how mind works, and of course there's many books here on that altar dedicated for this what we call technical term Buddhist epistemology? Mm-hmm. Say it loud, please. Huh?
Epistemology.
You understand?
Yes.
Yeah. That's, this whole text is dedicated to study the mind. You could say all these texts is about psychology. You could say this whole text is not talking about how to become Buddhist. It's talking about just talking about the mind. No mind. So now, why is it so important? I think all the time. You think, we all think. Doesn't matter whether you are Tibetan. It's not like, oh, only Tibetan thinks, we don't think. It's not like that, we all think. That means whatever you call, I'm not sure in the West what you call, in according to Buddhist psychology, it's called mind. It's called mind. What we have physical body, we all have. Whether you're Buddhist, not Buddhist, atheist, believer, not believer, we all have body. And we all think. That's very common things that we all share. We all share. Within the humanity, we all share this same two principal things. We are body, or we think. So, what we are looking for, we are looking for happiness. Am I right? We are all looking for happiness. It doesn't matter. If you believe in Buddhism, then you look for happiness. If you don't believe in Buddhism, then you look for suffering. It's not like that. We are all looking for happiness. So now think. You divide happiness, and that's kind of a complicated topic. It's a kind of complicated topic, how you define happiness. It's kind of a complicated topic. So, we have physical body, and we think, what you call mind. So now happiness, there can be only two, related to the physical body or related to the mind. What you call human happiness, divine happiness, that mentioned in the textbook, it mentioned in the Tara practice, may I achieve best human happiness and divine happiness. Do anybody remember the word? Some of you remember? Another mean the word, maybe say the best form of human happiness and divine happiness. Now you wonder, what is the best form of human happiness? You wonder, because of course you are human. Then you wonder, what is the best form of human happiness? You wonder. So then there's like, you know, there's a book, something that you read and you don't never analyze. Not like something that you read and you analyze and you question, what is it? What is that? What do you mean human happiness? What is human happiness? Physical happiness, mental happiness. How we get physical happiness? The mind that commonly known, that like five senses, this is not the mind that we are studying in the psychology. We are not studying eye sense. We are not studying the nose sense, something that smells. We are not studying that. That's commonly known as the mind. You know, we see, we hear, we smell, we feel, we touch, we hear. That's not you study in the psychology. Am I right?
Not necessarily.
Yeah, so mind doesn't mean, this is called senses, five senses. Whatever joy or pleasure that we receive through these five senses is very temporary, very temporary. You could call it physical happiness. There's nothing wrong. But it's very temporary. Because why is it temporary? Because it's heavily dependent on object. Object. Happiness from authentic Papa John pizza. Authentic Papa John pizza. That will disappear when you go to Nepal. There's no Papa John pizza. So that happiness is gone. Meaning you land there. Happiness. Based on like happiness based on the Starbucks, Papa John pizza, all of that. Minute you land there, it's finished. Not there, because objects are not there. These are temporary, so these are temporary, heavily dependent on objects. So we all know how to achieve that. We all know how to achieve. Having all this object round, having all this object round, does that guarantee happiness? Now it's kind of complicated. Now it's kind of complicated. So it needs a lot of reason. Not just simple faith or simple belief. Need a lot of reason. That is a lot of thinking. So now the question is, what is mental happiness? What is mental happiness? This is a big question. This is not can be answered easily. Can be answered easily. Oh. So having all the external object of five senses, does that guarantee happiness? Question: does that guarantee happiness? Answer is probably not. Answer is probably not. You experience, I experience. You could have tons of things to eat in your refrigerator, same time you can be unhappy. That proves. So now that's why psychology, psychology is very important. To study, there's something happening within inside, very deep, something's happening. Or maybe like many different kind of thoughts rising, many different kind of thought rising. That probably makes life more complicated, All kind of thought rise, and not just see, not just seeing them rise, but seeing is no problem, but believing in. So that causes a lot of problems. So this text, I'm thinking probably read some text, some message from this text I already taught in the Wednesday night class. So this is also, explains Buddhist psychologists, okay. Does it require you to become believing Buddhism? It doesn't require to say some prayer. It only requires to think. It requires a lot of thinking. That's for sure. It requires a lot of thinking. It doesn't require you to say some prayer. It doesn't require you to sit down. It doesn't require you to do some offering here, there. It requires a lot of thinking. Why? Because of thinking, the life becomes complicated. Thinking, because of seeing something, all kind of thought rise, smelling something, all kind of thought rise, hearing something, all kind of thought rise, touching something, all kind of thought rise, out of that, that's why life gets complicated. That's why. If like every time when you see every thought that rise is something positive, oh, life is going to be much better. Every time you hear something, even though something has something that you don't like, after that, the thought that rises, if thought that rises is positive, doesn't matter what you hear. Right after that, thought that rises, if that's positive, there's no impact in your mind, there's no impact. Oh. So many things happening here on the surface, deep down, there's always calm. Firm, steady, always calm, like the bottom of oceans. That can happen. But it requires a lot of thinking, of course, mindfulness. So in the, according to the 8 verses, total transformations, stanza number 3, there's like 8 stanzas in the text, 8 stanzas, stanza number 3 said it very clearly, Gishilangri Thapa said it very clearly. And that teaching is based on practical level, you know. Chalam Kundu. Can you read that? Chalam Kundu. That's called 8 verses, 4 transformations. That's psychology, thought transformations. Certain thought needs to transform. If you don't transform their thought will generate suffering, continuously generate suffering, continuously make my life more complicated. That's why their thought needs to be transformed or tamed. That's the only way you can become better. Practically, so that's why this Gishilangri Thapa, one of the Kadamba master from Tibetan, long, long time ago, I'm not sure how many, at least more than 600 years, at least, because Lama Tsongkhapa was born now almost exactly 600 years ago. Gishilangri Thapa was before Lama Tsongkhapa, so that's clearly, it's not more than 600 years, I'm not sure exactly, more than 600 years. So that means that text has been written almost more than 600 years ago. So then you say the word, you remember by heart, you say, and not just mumble, you know, you just say and you think. It kind of reminds you. It reminds you to be mindful. It's almost like putting the, when you go to the store, sometimes they put a sign, yellow sign, because if the floor is wet, they put a sign, caution. So that helps. So then people, when you see that, you are more cautious. Because maybe there are some dangers. Maybe you, that is like that, you know. Like,
In the Gold Prayer Book, it's on page 161. Vigilant, the moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay.
Don't worry about the word term delusions. That's like, is that fancy term or what? Actually refers to disturbing thought. Disturbing thought, that needs to be mindful. Disturbing thought. Why is it called disturbing? Just think about that. Why is it called disturbed? How is it?
Disturbing.
Why is it called disturbed? That's English word. That's not Tibetan word. That's English language. Disturbing. Why you call it disturbed? Do you call compassion disturbing thought?
No.
You don't call compassion disturbing. Which kind of thought do you call disturbing?
Negative. Anger.
Nothing to do with Buddhism. It's nothing to do with Buddhism. It's like just... That's not Buddhist word, that's English word, disturbing thought. Which thought you call disturbing?
Jealousy,
anger. Why you call disturbing? Why you call disturbed? Why you call disturbing thought?
To disturb your peace of mind.
And they're negative thoughts.
Because it's disturbing something. Mm-hmm. It's disturbing your peace of mind. Do you want that? Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with Buddhism. It's not religion business. It's like day-to-day life, because you... What happens when you get angry? You could wear the rope. Meanwhile, you have no peace of mind. The rope doesn't protect. It only protects if you think. If you think, not just one, if you think and think, then you realize, oh, the bottom line, every single second, every single moment, what I'm looking for happiness. Based on that, need to precisely calculate how you approach things, people, whatever it might be. You get immense benefit if you approach with calm mind. There's something you can do. It's not like something you cannot do. There's something you can do. We all can do. It requires some effort. It is not going to become like automatic. It requires some effort. So then the delusion, that could be a like technical term, but actually it's like disturbing thought. Yeah, is it a challenge? Yeah, of course, it's a big challenge. It's not easy. You know? Will it become ever easy? I don't think so. So, if we are sincerely, seriously, if we are seriously, not just once in a while, if we are seriously seeking peace of mind, what we need to be more mindful, disturbing thought. There's something to worry about, something to be concerned about. That needs to be those disturbing thoughts need to be, checked quite seriously. Oh, these are the ones destroy your peace of mind. That's why it's called disturbing thought. It doesn't call beneficial thought. Oh, you may think, it's beneficial. No, that's trick. It's not beneficial. Any single one of disturbing thought is not good. It's not good for your health. Now you talk about in the West, healthy mind, healthy body. There's a core relationship. It's not about belief. Mind is always calm, deep down, always calm, peaceful. You have better health. Your blood circulation is much better. Who said? Scientists said. Scientists. Not like, that's very true. So now, Cholam Kundu Rangjula, so Cholam Kundu Rangjula teachings. You analyze throughout. Let me translate with my broken English. That Cholam Kundu Rangjula, Cholam Kundu, throughout all conduct, whether you are talking, doing something, thinking something, this all conduct. Throughout all your conduct, Cholam Kundu Rangjula, teachings, analyze. There's always risk. That's why you analyze, you think. Toji, nimuche matas, minute disturbing thought rise. What you should understand, sake of your own happiness. Just forget of all sentient beings. At the moment, just forget of all sentient beings. For your own sake of your own happiness. Cholam Kundu Rangjula Tochings, Nimoche Mata, minute the disturbing thought rise, Daje Maru Chevenas. What it will do, what that disturbing thought will do, yeah, that's what you need to be more aware of. It will destroy your peace of mind of others. That's what it does. That's what exactly it does. It will destroy your peace of mind. It will destroy peace of mind of others. That's what it does. It destroyed your peace of mind of others. Therefore, send up Dhyane Dogpa Shu, the last word, with every effort, make sure doesn't get any chance, disturbing thought does not get any chance to rise. Even though it rises, you, with the full force, you stop them. For what? Sake of your own happiness, that's all. If you want to have peace of mind for that purpose only, with the full force, reciting mantra, meditations, reading something, going away, making space, it's too difficult to sit there and do that. Just go away somewhere else. With every effort, with whatever ways, doesn't have to read something, doesn't have to meditate, whatever ways you can stop with that disturbing thought, must try. That is called psychology. Is that called psychology? That according to Buddhism, that's Buddhist psychology. That's how you help. You don't have to go to somebody else to pay hundreds of dollars. You can do it by yourself. That's why Lama Ji wrote the book, Becoming Your Own Therapist. Oh, you don't have to go to somebody else to pay hundreds of dollars and just sit there. But I'm not saying you shouldn't go, but you know, you don't have to do that. Send up journey double shows with full force. Whatever ways you can find, the bottom line is to stop. That's stop. Oh. So that's who said, not me. Gishin Langri Thapa said, how many years ago? More than 600 years ago. You know, that is, I think, Buddhist psychology. So.
So I still have a part of me that's not fully on board with this, and this is my problem.
Mm.
So it's easy for me to see the disturbing thoughts that lead to like anger or hatred being something we ought to just not do. But when it comes to the disturbing thoughts that lead to fear and worry, I have a problem because I think if I smell smoke, I might think, the house is on fire. This is a disturbing thought, but it leads me to put out the fire, so it's good. Or, for example, if I'm a new mother and I'm worried about my baby, is my baby still alive? Is it, you know, sleeping in a bad position? I better go check and make sure. Well, that can go on for a year, you know, every night. You're worried about it. But at the same time, I think if I don't have any of these worry thoughts, I would never take any action to put out the fire or save the baby. And, you know, these things do happen. Houses do burn down. Babies do die. And so I have this idea that those kind of disturbing thoughts are okay.
I think here the disturbing thought that we are discussing here, disturbing thought, that has caused problem to yourself, to others. That kind of disturbing thought, it caused problem to you and to others. So that kind of, I'm not sure whether you call disturbing thought or not, that kind of thought also, like, you know, benefits somebody from, like, you know, like, that kind of thought, you know, like, worry about how it's going to get burned, and like, worry about children, you know, that also benefits. So here, the disturbing thought that we are discussing here, particularly based on this 8 words, the thought transformation, that disturbing thought is like harms you and harms others. So that kind of disturbing thought. Not how you say, not like, so of course, you know, in Buddhism, that Buddhism believes life after this, life before that, then worrying about being born in the lower realms. So that's not, you could call that disturbing thought. I'm not sure whether you should call that disturbing thought or not. I'm not in the position to make the decisions. So that, you know, that's helpful because it kind of motivates you to make sure that you don't go there, you know.
Survival.
Huh?
Survival too.
I mean, I'm not sure, like, disturbing, that word, that English word, I'm not sure how you apply that. So in this call, as a pneumon, that's why this is called delusions. It's called, technically called delusions. There's no benefit. There's no benefit for you. There's no benefit for others. There's only harm. So that kind of disturbing thought, for example, like anger. What do you do? When you get angry, what do? You enjoy? If not, what do you do? What do you do? You don't have to be Buddhist. As a human, what do you do? When you get angry, what do you do? What is the way to control anger? So this is all this like thought transformation tests. It helps you to deal with your disturbing thoughts, how to not to give them any chance to rise, and how to be mindful. So bottom line, the mind is good, everything's good. The mind is not good, it's not good. So this is all boils down on your thought. So then we must do something, we must do something. So even though it's hard, yeah, it is not easy, no, it's hard, no, it's, no, but it's worth to put effort, it's worth to put effort. So anybody, you want to, yeah, please.
Piggybacking on that fear and anxiety, like, so it can be good to check your smoke detectors once every 6 months, but if you become obsessed with it, like you wake up and you check the battery, and then you check the battery at lunch, and then you check the battery at 2, and then you check the battery at 4, like, then I was kind of thinking, like, is it the middle way that, like, you have to realize there's some extreme that's too much. Like, I can't check my oil every time I drive anywhere, but I should check it every once in a while. Like, I don't want to become
obsessive.
Like, then it becomes a disturbing thought that I'm always worried that my tires are flat, and I can't go anywhere without stopping at the stoplight and checking my tires. Like,
then how you help if someone's doing this, how you help? So some people check, make sure it's locked or not locked. They check many times. It's not like if you are not doing that, it's not, doesn't mean you are better. If someone else doing it, I usually don't say anything. What is the best way to? I'm not sure. Maybe there's any best way to help. How you help? If somebody is killing somebody like that, killing somebody, so that's probably not good. Probably need to say something to somebody, you know. Then that's not good because some other lives get hurt. So that if you can do something, you must do something. If somebody is like checking the lock, make sure it's locked or unlocked, you know, like, is that a problem? So I'm not like, I heard like sometimes people take photos. You know, they are trying very hard to help themselves. Not to go back and back, they take photos, and they look at, because they are the one who took photos, so then they kind of get relaxed because they don't even go back. So everything has name, everything's name, you know, everything's level, you know, this is a problem, there's a problem, there's a problem, is that big deal to, like,
I think using his analogy, for example, tire pressure, I think one way you could look at it is what kind of tools can you use to kind of predict, okay, how do I solve the problem? Maybe I know that tire pressure is different in hotter months versus colder months, and I know based on that I can determine how often I need to check. What are other tools that you can arm yourself with to deal with those obsessions? So, for example, you're worried about if you lock your car, you can buy technology that allows you to remotely lock it and you don't have to be around. Those kind of things are what I would look at, is how do I find another tool or an avenue to deal with that, say, disturbing thought or obsession.
Yeah, and I think that there's a big difference between disturbing thoughts and how do you handle it. Okay, so it doesn't mean you ignore it, because I don't think he's saying to ignore it. If there's a challenging situation, you don't ignore it, but if you take the anger out of the situation, if you take the fear out of it, if there was a fire, if you could handle it calmly, you would handle it better. I don't think he's saying to ignore the situation. I think he's saying, how do we choose to handle the situation?
This is not habit, right? This is not habit. This is more, obsession is not habit. Is it a habit? even in habit is not hard to break. Habit is not easy to break. If you, with mindfulness, with strong determination, it can be stopped. One day. If you believe in logic, it doesn't make logical, it doesn't make sense. If you can stop one day, you could stop 2 days. Logically, it doesn't make sense. Otherwise, you cannot stop even one day. If you could stop one day, then you are thinking, because like thinking of the experience that you have been, you know, starting to feel very good, and that lot of things that reminds you, kind of bothers your mind, then you decide, okay, I'm not going to do this again. Then you are success one day, and you are kind of happy. So that can be done. Then over time, you may fall back. You know, doesn't mean, you know, say, for example, if you break your hand, you have to try all your best to fix it, fix the hand. You can't do like, oh, I'm going to break this hand, I'm going to break my head, I'm going to break my leg because it only broke one hand. So that's not very smart. Why you break other hand? Because simply you think this is broke. You're breaking every single one. That's not very smart things to do. When you break one, what do you do? You try to fix. You know, so that so that means, you know, you try hard, then you couple of days you are successful, then one day you fall back. Doesn't mean that you are not going to be successful. You should not focus on that. You should focus what happened last 2 days. You are very successful. Focus more on that. Draw some inspiration from there. So to move on. Continue to move on. You know, like that. So habit, it's the obsession. So I think it's okay. There's nothing wrong. Like I don't see anything wrong. Of course that you should not make fun on somebody who is checking the log again. Simply you are not doing that. That doesn't mean you are better than that person. If that person is doing that for whatever reason, so then don't make big deal out of that. So that's what that person do. So should not label something, you know, like that's very obvious you see, but you know, there's many things here. We are obsessive that you don't see, you know, here. So now the question is how to help. Is that problem? If it's a problem, then how to help? If it's not a problem, if some people does that, some people don't do, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. What's like, yeah.
Sometimes disturbing thoughts can get in the way of being compassionate. I mean, if you have a disturbing thought about you seeing somebody starving or some inequity among people, wouldn't the disturbing thought sort of lead you to be more compassionate?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you want to provoke a disturbing thought. See somebody suffering, see some inequality, something unjust.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's good to be disturbed by it so you will have more compassion.
Yeah, so that's very true. So now the question is, will you call that a disturbing thought? Will we call that disturbing thought? Or, I'm not sure, that's why disturbing thought, how you define disturbing thought. Here, this is a particular disturbing thought we are talking about. We need that rise. It's like it disturbs your peace of mind, it disturbs peace of mind of others. So that kind of disturbing thought. So now, of course, when you go to a third world country, you see people are starving, sleeping on the street, child begging on the street. That's not just one, many of them. Practically you can do so much. You could give one child something, that there's be 10 more. Practically there's some. And of course they're kind of like, it kind of broke your heart. It kind of breaks your heart. But practically there's so much you can do, you know, so. And yeah, that's one of the hardest things when you travel, you know. I do travel. When you travel, you see things like that. Is that what you call it? It's called disturbing thought. But that kind of thought allows you to, if you have will to help, that thought allows you to help. at the same time, then you may end up disappointed because you give one child, all of a sudden there are 20 child show up. That happens. If you give to one child, that child will tell some other child, there will be 20 of them show up. Maybe they're trying to sell you something you don't need, and they kind of beg you to buy, but those things they sell, you don't need. So, what, like, you know, like, yeah, practically it's hard. It's not easy, it's difficult, you know. So, one time I was in Cambodia, so hot, so I bought one water, drinking water. There's one boy, he's like 7 years old, he came to try to sell me something, and he said, please buy. So I jokingly told him, I have no money. And he said, you have money, you bought water. So he's selling something that made of like some kind of like this, you know, they have to wear. Then I say, okay, so we'll take photos, I'll give you some money. We take, after that, there's 20 of them show up, 20 of them. So it's very, you know, like, it's like, yeah, it's like heartbreaking, but there's practically, there's so much you can do. There's practically so much you can do. There's just one part. That's just happening in Cambodia. Then there's been just many other countries when you go there. And then sometimes you've been cheated a few dollars here, there. If you have not been mindful, you get very angry. Other hand, these people make whole day, not sitting on the computer, whole day, hard labor. How much they make? $3. $6 to $6, $3. Now you are so angry because you've been cheated like a few dollars, you've been so angry. When you learn how much they make, same in India, people like 110 degrees of heat, tricycle, they drive, you bargain with them, they ask you 10 rupees, you're asking them 5 rupees, then you bargain. Meanwhile, all this heat, you can't imagine that you are driving that. It's impossible. Somebody know that. So, yeah, practically it's hard, so that's why it needs to be mindful, you know, throughout the day. There's no easy answer, so we have to try all our best, no, not easy. So that kind of disturbing thought, I think, helps you to help. And sometimes it overwhelms you. And then you realize practically there's so much you can do. And then you may end up disappointed. Then maybe, you know, so then risk is that thought might let many disturbing thoughts. Or like, oh, we, America, we give so much aid. Where all this aid went? You don't see why all these children are on the street. What does millions of dollars, where they went? Then they generate all kind of negative thought. And kind of like, you know, that happens sometimes. People go to underdeveloped countries. Instead of having good time, they have miserable time. Because, you know, they... I don't know what to say.
So there's an expression that I have heard that says, when you have a problem, act as if it were all up to you and pray as if it were all up to God. So I'm using the word God here. I hope that doesn't bother people, but
No, not at all.
So I think that's the piece that is difficult with the compassion or the obsession is when you have done everything you can do, you've acted as thoroughly as you can act to address the problem, and you are still laying awake in bed at night 4 hours, 5 hours, worried about this thing, or you're unable to do your job at work because you're obsessed about, did I lock the car, or you're overwhelmed by your compassion and you're just so depressed you can't do it. You know, once you get to the point where you've done everything you can do, could you talk about the Buddhist techniques, practices for the praying to bring yourself some peace of mind that things are going to be okay somehow? Is that, you know, the second piece of that? The action's one thing, but then there's the having faith, developing faith that, do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm. Yeah. You know, compassion is supposed to bring strength. Strength, compassion is supposed to bring strength. The compassion is strength. This is a very good question, very good questions. Yeah, so many things happening, so many things happening. Some of them you see, some of them hear, some of them you never hear, never see. It's happening every day, different levels. Practically what you can do, practically what you can do. You may have wish, that's good things, that's positive things, you have good wish, maybe you wish there will be no, how you say, no poverty, there will be no hunger. You have wish, that's a wonderful wish. That wish allows you to, whatever opportunity you get, you will help someone. That you having that wish is very good. But practically, why these things are happening? Why these things are happening? Because of you did something wrong? Why these things are happening? Why these things are happening? Complicated. Very complicated. I could say prayer, I could I could do practice and all of that. But that's, please help me. Help me to answer that question. Help me to answer that question. Thinking about karma, will that help? Will that help to keep you calm? I'm just throwing out there. Will that help?
Yeah, Geshe-la. I think one thing I would do with that is kind of use it to lend more energy to my practice.
Yeah.
It's like if I knew somebody who had cancer and the only medical treatment I understood was how to put on a Band-Aid, that I knew that wouldn't help, but then go to medical school and do what I can to help people with cancer. Mm-hmm. So some of it is just I do as much as I can with what I have, but also understanding that, with karma and the nature of samsara, there's only so much I can do hands-on in this lifetime, but try to lend more energy to the determination to get enlightened.
That makes sense. You have to reach enlightenment in order to help all these beings. Your enlightenment is very critical. You reach enlightenment to sake of all this welfare of all these living beings. You reach enlightenment. That's the Buddhist approach. You walk day and night for your enlightenment to help others. Is that really practical way of helping? Now the question is what are another alternative? What do you do? What do you do? You are overwhelmed. Your mind is very much disturbed by seeing all these people are suffering. What do you do? You pray, keep your mind calm, not necessarily for yourself, praying for all these beings who are having difficulties. You send you read something through that, you are sending positive thoughts towards all of them to alleviate, as a lift out, alleviate from the problems. You send positive thought. Then maybe you do feel that you are doing something, then nothing.
You have to bring something. Every day. You are being consistent. Not just when weather is nice, you forget.
coming.
I think we'll switch that out. I very much use the practice of wisdom and compassion, the two wings of the bird of enlightenment, because it is so overwhelming sometimes. And so you have so much compassion that it does feel like your heart is just breaking sometimes. But then I try to bring the wisdom wing in to know that there's only so much I personally can do. I try to think about what I can literally do in that given situation, so that, and then I have to use the wisdom of not overextending, you know, for money. Like when I went to India and I brought so much money on the trip that I could spend, and I got access to credit cards. I had a lot more money in the bank, but I couldn't. I only brought so much money because I have to live. I have to pay the bills. I've got to keep my business going. I've got to keep all of this, my other life going too, but I brought so much money. And I just decided at the beginning, because you do, you see so much heartbreak, and it is challenging. Those children come up to you. So I literally sat down with my money at the beginning of the trip. I planned it out that I was going to be in India for 15 days, and I knew that every time we were going to go that there were going to be places where I was going to see this. And I literally just divvied up my money so that on this one day I could give out that much money. And when it was gone, it was gone. It was just all I could do that day. It was all I could do that day. And then at the end of the trip, the little bit of money that I had left, I left there for the monks to continue to give it away while they were going to be there. So it was the wisdom of this is all I have that I can literally give and do this trip, and trying to just kind of lay it out. And there were several times that it was gone in 10 minutes. So it was just gone. That's it. And so, and then sometimes it did last a little bit longer, but it's just the trying to bring the wisdom with it, because I could so easily have just gone in and drained my bank account and given it all away. But that is just a drop in the bucket. So I just did what I could. I still give to specific things, but within reason, because like anybody else right now, I don't know about you, but my mail is just filled with requests. I my name got sold, and I'm on every nonprofit, you know, mailing list in the world, and I can't give to everything. I wish that I could. So the wisdom for me is that I don't even open some of those. I don't even open most of them. I give what I can. I've made the determination of how much money I can give. And it's not just here to Kadapa Center. There's other things that hold me. But there has to come a wisdom with all of this as well. And so that helps my heartbreak at night sometimes when I just wish that there was more that I could do, that, you know, and then I will just start looking. So it's, then I'll give a gift of time. It's not just money. I can give some of my time to different things too. So again, it's just a balance. It's a balance, and sometimes my heart breaks, and sometimes I just have to pull it back, but that's the best that I can do. And I just try to go to bed thinking, I am a good person. I'm doing the best that I can do, and I'll get up tomorrow and try to do it again. And so it's just trying to balance that wisdom and compassion, the two wings of the bird of enlightenment. I use that a lot.
You want to say something? Okay. Let's go. Please, let's go. 1 second.
Anyone?
So maybe here, like, in the West, probably solution means fix. Fix. If you don't fix, there's no solutions. Practically, we have to be practical. You can fix how much you can fix in your life. Maybe praying is solutions. Might not fix everything right away, but it fixed something here. Fix something here. So more like the dead will fix, you know, something, you know, like I say, maybe West, you are so good at fixing things, you know, or prepare to fix or fixing things. That's how you solve problems. Maybe now some of these problems, maybe you can't fix, you cannot fix. Need to understand, need to be practical. If you are asking me personally, what I do, I say, but you know, like sometimes there's like not many things that disturb my mind because I live by myself. So no, there's not many things that disturb my mind. Then of course, you know, talking to people, talking to friends, you know, hearing this new, that news, you know, like somebody's complaining about something, so then of course the mind is still weak. Mind is still weak. It's very fragile. It gets disturbed quite easy. It's not firm as a mountain. It's still fragile. When you hear something, then mind gets, you know, kind of disturbed. I should not probably brag. I should not brag. How is it? Brag?
Huh?
How is it?
Brag.
Yeah, it's going to sound like brag. How is it?
Brag.
Yeah, it's going to be sounds like bragging. So if you ask me personally what I do, I'm going as a monk what I do. So I, at home, so I do a lot of prayers. I do a lot of prayer every day. A lot of prayers, you know, consistently. It's not based on the nice weather or bad weather. Consistently do a lot of prayers. And once the blue moon, most of the time it's just mumbling. I mean nothing, it's just mumbling, it's just, you know, that's what I just do. Once in a while, then I think, it kind of reminds me. It reminds me many things, many, many things. Many things, it's not just one thing, it reminds me many things. So then at the end, then I dedicate it. If there's any merit I created by doing that, then I dedicate it for well-being of others. But then I felt like, at the end of the day, I felt I did something, then nothing. Just worried, I did something. I felt like my existence has some purpose and some meaning to live my life, that I could do this thing, this number X and X, Y, Z things I can do. Then I feel like, end of the day, I feel like my life has some meaning, some purpose. And then I think that's the purpose of life, living life for others. Others. In my case, you know, like, say a lot of prayers, dedicated for others. And then, of course, whenever you hear the news, see the news, here, there are the things, a lot of things happening, kind of bothers your mind. Kind of bothers your mind. Why? Oh, there's many why. And practically, there's very little you can do. Practically, like, then, as I said, this reminds many, many things, not just one thing, many things. Things are happening, not because you intend them to happen. Is happening based on causes and conditions. It's like complicated. So the best thing that I do, keep my mind calm, plus do something to feel like, end of the day, that I did something, is my prayer. My prayer. As I mentioned before, you know, I light more than 21 candles at my altar, thinking, all the people who come to the Kadamba Center, thinking I interact with people who come to this center, I've been thinking about them and lighting those candles. And from there, then I've been thinking, all the people, you know, I like struggling with addictions, you know, all kind of problems, you hear all kind of problems, just, then you feel like you are doing something, whether they feel or not, then you are doing something. That's how I keep my mind calm. Otherwise, if I just focus what's happening there, do nothing, yeah, I will be miserable. Meanwhile, practically, there's nothing I can do. Many things, you know, oh, many things. So I'm generally speaking, what will be the answer? I'm not sure. What will be the answer? How you keep your mind calm? Solution, the one thing that I'm very clear about, solution in the West means fix things. But that is not the case in Buddhist psychology. Solution doesn't mean fix things. It's hope for change. It's hope for change. It's not like There are many, many well-wisher people out there. Why is there a problem? There are a lot of problems. There's a lot of problem now. There was a lot of problem in the past. There is a lot of problem now. There's going to be a lot of problem in the future. Practically, what you can do. And doing nothing probably feel worse. But doing something doesn't mean fixing things. So in the West, I think like, you know, that's like pretty much fixed, or then there's no solutions. In Eastern philosophy, it's not always about fixing things. It's about doing something, to feel contributing something. So then I thought, you know, living a life for others, through prayer, through practices, that is purpose of life. Breathing for others, that's the purpose of life. I want to breathe because I want to say something for well-being of others. That's why I want to live my life. So then I felt like my life has purpose or meaning to live. So generally speaking, I have no idea what is the answer. I have no idea. I don't have answer for everybody. If you're asking me personally what I do, what happened in Tibet, how many people die? What do you do? Practically, there's nothing much you can do. So, that's just an example, you know, like whenever you hear the news about Tibet, it's kind of like heartbreaking, but practically, there's nothing much you can do. People are like kind of like, you know, like not having not having freedom to speak what you believe, what you like, you go for jail. Simply saying that. Is that brings you happiness? No, of course not. It brings you suffering. What do you do? Like then, as I said, you pray, and whatever like opportunity you get, you talk, explain to people with calm mind, explain to them what's truth, not with the biased attitude. Then, you know, like same, this is happening in the big scale, small scale in our life, day-to-day life. So, yeah, many, many things to being a refugee. So many struggles, so many difficulties that you go through, no matter wherever you go. So there's so many of you have never experienced that in your life. No, but you have also other problems. But it's hard. So like you do, I say, questions of why it's happening. What's happening in the very peaceful country that has nothing to do with the war? What's happening there? Why that country get destroyed? Do we deserve that? Nobody deserves suffering. Nobody deserves suffering. Then why is happening? If you blame someone, will that solve the problem? Probably not. It's already happened. It's happening now. It's going to probably happen in the future. So, yeah. I don't know. Oh, sorry, I don't know the answer for, generally speaking, I don't know. So, but I think Buddhism helps Tibetan people, even though they went through the last 60 years, they went through so much, plus their individual life struggles, plus struggle for Tibet, so then plus their individual life. So being refugee in India, so they're going here, going there, going Europe and everywhere, so you still carry that baggage that, you know, you don't have countries. And how you're going to get back? Practically seems like impossible. It's impossible to get back. You are here, yeah, America. You can talk, you can say, I love Dalai Lama, I love Tibet, I can talk about Tibetan freedom, Tibet was country. I don't go to jail. So you are living here, sometimes you do feel guilty. You know, like people in Tibet, they can't say, they say, I love Dalai Lama, they go to jail for that. What do you do? That happens again and again. And people who, like I say, you probably heard about 155 people there sacrificed their life. Practically, what happened? Nothing happened. Nothing happened. Meanwhile, 155 people lost their life. It's not wise to cry every single day like this. It's not helpful. So what do? You pray. You know, you pray every day. You pray that something good will happen. So you don't have that problem. You live in different countries. You don't have that problem. But Tibet, you know, like, yeah, it kind of like pains your heart. Life is very precious, you know. They did it for Tibetan cause. Here you live in freedom country. What do you do every day for Tibetan cause? Rather than saying prayer, not very, pretty much nothing. You know, like, then you feel bad sometimes. So, if you talk here all the time, people say, oh, Gisela is now talking about politics. Some people may not like, oh, Gisela is not talking about politics. Even though it's really happening in Tibet, you know, so some people then, so just, you know, you just pray every day. So some of probably you are aware. Some of you are aware. Some of probably you may not have, you never heard before. But there's ongoing struggle. There's fear, always there's fear. Losing His Holiness Dalai Lama. There's nothing you can do. Fear of what Indian government will do if His Holiness passed away. For Tibetan people, you don't know. There's fear. So it's not like I'm free from worried, I'm free from fear, I'm free from stress. Not like that. No, there's I think each and every Tibetan has, you know, they have like heavy load in their back. No matter how well you're living your life, still there, you know, so much to think about. On the other hand, sorry, so I'm just, you know, so that's not what I intend to do this morning when I come here. So that's not my intention, you know, to cry here for talk about Tibetan politics. Some of you may think, oh, Gisela always seems like very happy. What is the other choice? There's no choice. You could choose to be miserable every day. There are many things that you can't do anything practically. You can't do anything. What do you do? Well, it's not like, oh, Gisela is free from worry, or his life is perfect. No, my life is not perfect. I have things to worry. I have no moral responsibility as a Tibetan. Mm-hmm. So that how I keep my mind calm, so I pray every day. I pray, then I think all the time. So whenever there's like difficulty related to the Tibetan cause, related to my own life, so you know, many things that reminds me every day through my prayers, oh, this could be the last day. Choose to think something positive or something miserable. It's your choice. Could be last day. I have no clue that I'll be here. There's no guarantee I'll be here tomorrow. So I'm trying to live my life best as I could, you know, mentally, to think something positive. So say a lot of prayers. So, and hope for the good. So try not to become attached to anything. So kind of reminds me. So sorry, I'm very sorry. So that's not my intentions to come here this morning to talk about Tibetan politics and cry in front of you. That's not my intentions. You know, it just happens. So. All the tears accumulated in the 1 month vacations coming out.
First of all, I don't think you should feel sorry for crying in front of us.
Mm.
I am deeply sorry that this is happening to you. In my country, there are a lot of problems. People who, especially Aboriginal peoples, who have been, massacred in the past, and it's something that hurts us all.
Mm.
What I'm going to say is something that I've has helped me lately when I am having problems. In my case, is I am deeply disturbed by the animals that die on the road. And while for many people this doesn't mean much, for me is deeply troubling, extremely troubling and painful. There is in a quantum mechanics phenomenon that there is an evidence that the observer has a deep relationship with what will happen with the particle that observer is observing, and that it can actually change reality at the subatomic level. The same thing, it seems that the scientists are finding out that this doesn't only apply to the subatomic level, but also to the macro level, what we see on a normal daily basis, you know. So in other words, what they're finding out is that we can actually change reality. It doesn't happen easily. You know, I cannot just build bridges all over the place for animals, you know, and say that it's just only by thinking it's going to happen. But there is an interesting situation where you visualize it, you feel it, is that you see it, you visualize it, you internalize what you want. In your case, what you're talking about, Tibet, you want to see Tibet free, and you want to see your people happy. So it's not just a hope. It's actually a visualization that if so many people, especially when many people gather together and visualize the same thing, it actually becomes reality in one way or another. And so I think that you are, in a way, doing that when you are praying. But if you add to that visualization, that seems to make a big difference, a huge difference. And so in my case, when I see animals dying on the road, what I do is I visualize those
wildlife crossings. That's what they're called. And in your case, therefore, I think that if you add that visualization, like you feel it, you actually feel it, it will come true one way or another. And if you also have other Tibetan people doing the same thing, it will one day come true. And once again, I feel your pain, because although I cannot understand it exactly the way that you are feeling it, I equate your pain to my pain. My pain is very deep, extremely deep, to the point that it actually is that disturbing thought that you're talking about. I cannot get out of that disturbing thought, because every time that an animal dies on the road, I die. That's how I feel. So please know that there is hope, and that one way or another, everything will come to an end. These bad things.
So the final conclusion, what I want to say is like, you should not feel that you didn't do anything, but you did, you know, so much for Tibetan cause, because I remember, because your taxpayer money goes for helping refugees. When I was in monastery, 7, 8, 9 years old in monastery, I remember, I'm eating your aid. I'm eating American aid, oil that comes in the can with two hands, American flags. And there's like wheat, bags of wheat, then milk powder, many things. Your money. That's your government aid. That's your money. You pay tax. That's your money. So I've been, not just me, all the monks back in the monastery, all the refugees in Tibetan, we've been eating. We are receiving, like, since, what, when I was there, like, late 60, at that time, food is very, I said, precious. We received, even I was a boy, I remember that how the bag looks like, bag of the wheat can. So, something to rejoice. Just don't think that you never did anything. You did so much, and still doing, you are helping. You know, it's your money, you pay tax, this money is not helping Tibetan cause. Still now we are, you know, getting benefit for you. So, you know, so Tibetan people always pray for your well-being. So don't think that, oh, I didn't do anything. No, you help. Since we have become refugee in India, so you help so much, so still helping now. So, as I said, you know, so I just got emotional talking about Tibetan things. So, anyway, thank you so much. So, have a wonderful weekend. Sorry for this class, it's not meant to be like that. So, anyway, my intention is to read something from here.
Okay, so on page 191 in the Go Prayer Book, let's read the praises to the 21 Taras. And if you have the white binder, it's on the pages colored green. From your sublime abode of the Potala, O Tara born from the green letter Tam, your crown adorned with Amitabha, action mother of the Buddhas of the three times. Tara, please come with your attendants. The gods and demigods bow to your lotus feet, O Tara, you who rescue all of our destitute. To you, Mother Tara, I pay homage. Oh, my prostrate to the noble transcendent liberator. Homage, Tara, swift heroic, eyesight lightning instantaneous. Sprung from opening statements of the Lord of Seerers, Shirvan Lotus. Homage, she whose face combines 100 autumn moons at fullest, blazing with thy rays resplendent as a 1,000-star collection. Homage, golden, blue, and lotus, waterborne and hand adorned, giving effort, karma, austerity, patience, meditation, her sphere. Homage, crown of Tathagatas, actions triumph without limits, relied on by conqueror's children, having reached every perfection. Homage, filling with Dutare, whom desire direction and space, trampling with her feet the seven worlds, able to draw forth all beings. Homage, worshipped by the All, Shaka Ani Brahma Maru.
honored by the host of spirits, corpses with Gandhavas Yaksha, homage with their trenches, sound destroying post magic diagram, her feet pressing left out right, blazing in a raging fireplace, homage to the very dreadful destroyer of Mara's champions, she with frowning lotus visage, who is slayer of all enemies, homage at the heart her fingers, adorn her with three jewel mood. Light remasses all excited, all directions fields adorn her, homage she so joyous radiant, crowning knitting garlands of light, mirthful laughing with Tutare, subjugating Mara's devas, homage she able to summon, all its guardians assembly, shaking frowning with her humzai, saving from every misfortune, homage crown adorned with crescent, moon on ornaments most shining, Amitabha in her hair and not, sending out much light eternal, homage she with trees ablaze, eon ending fire abiding, righteous let that joy surround you, troops of enemies destroying, homage she who strikes the ground with, her palm and with her foot beats it, scowling with the letter whom the seven levels she does conquer, homage happy virtuous peaceful, she whose field is peace nirvana, she endowed with omen soha, destroyer of the great evil, homage she with joy surrounded, tearing foes bodies asunder, freezes human knowledge mantra, arrangement of the ten letters, homage to the received letter, of the shape of syllable, by example shakes the three rules, Miru Mandava and Vindhya, homage holding in her hand the hermit point of the lake form, with spice of Kantara empty, totally dispelling poison, Mishi whom gods and their kings, and the Kinaras do honor, armored in our joyful splendor, she dispels the jinx and conflicts, homage she whose two eyes bright with radiance of sun and full moon, with white Tara and Tutare, she dispels severe contagion, homage full of liberating, powered by the set of free natures, just as the spirit yakshas, and race corpus supreme today. These praises with the root mantras and prostrations of Star 21. Turn to page 190. For the prayer of the benefit. Whoever is endowed with devotion for the goddess and recites this with supreme faith, remembering at dawn upon waking and in the evenings, will be granted all fearlessness, will perfectly pacify all negativities, and will eliminate all unfortunate migrations. The multitudes of conquerors will quickly grant initiation, thus endowed with this greatness. One will eventually reach the state of a Buddha. If affected by the most terrible poison, whether ingested, drunk, or from a living being, just by remembering will one be thoroughly cleansed. If this prayer is recited 2, 3, or 7 times, it will pacify all the sufferings of torment caused by fears, fevers, and poisons, and by other beings as well. If you wish for a child, you will get a child. If you wish for wealth, you will receive wealth. All your wishes will be fulfilled, and all obstacles pacified. Then turn to page 246 and 247. Read the dedication prayer by Master Shantideva. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of our merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvest. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of world. Then pages 244 and 245 for the short long life prayers. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good, all-powerful Chenreze Tenzin Gyatso. Please remain until samsara ends. Now on the other side, the one who masters speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatara, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. And then for Lama Tsongkhapa Rinpoche,
You uphold the subduer's moral way, who serves as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjuna's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And then seven green tar mantras for Geshe-la and Geshe samples. Long, healthy, happy life. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.
Thank you very much.
You.
Have a nice weekend. Kat is going to sleep now.
Do you have an announcement? We have a few things. You want to go first? There's a newcomer orientation, or Q&A, newcomer Q&A with Sandy in the back afterwards. And Aaron's going to speak to us for the... I'm sorry. I know that's... okay.
Okay. I've just been asked to share why I give at Kadampa Center and talk a little bit about kind of how giving happens at Kadampa Center and just use myself as an example of that. The reason I give is because I believe that to really benefit other people, I have to develop qualities myself first. So generosity is an important one. First one, critical one. and through my experience at Kadampa Center, I've developed a lot of faith in that. So I give. My giving at this point is probably a good mix of attachment and generosity. I see something, a result that I think would be pleasant to my mind, and so I try to make that happen. But the opportunity to practice, because it's all about practice, I just need practice, in an environment where we all acknowledge this, we're all working towards this mind that really has fully developed these qualities. And wherever we're at on that path, we try our best and we try together and we work together to do things with that end in mind is, to me, very beneficial. I think that I have experienced, you know, just in my observation, it seems that I've seen people give with sort of that spontaneous wish of benefiting others. That's what it appears to me. And I just feel that that's so inspiring and so motivating. So I give to Kadampa Center when I give to be a part of that community, to have that experience, to have that support. Also, I give to Kadampa Center because of the teachings, because of the lineage, because we have such a dedicated spiritual program coordinator, and all of the things that this place offers gives the opportunity to other people to have the ability to hear these teachings in English, to experience Western teachers come and have this Western experience. We have the ability to meditate here, to purify, to create merit, to go on these Tara many retreats. There's so much. So I think it's helpful as I practice my giving to give to a place where I think it can give the opportunity to other people. Sorry, I'm starting off on such a rough patch. So how to support that? So practically, what can we do? At Kadampa Center, our budget's $250,000. $200,000 of that comes in during the annual appeal. Oh, I guess it must be a little more. Anyway, $200,000 of that comes in during the annual appeal, meaning that people do one-time. God, I'm good, thank you. People set up their one-time gifts, or they set up their monthly giving. So monthly giving I love monthly giving because I don't forget. I've been around long enough that I had to remember to bring a check in and write it and put it in the box. But now I can set things up online. It's very easy. I can think about my monthly budget and go, what would I spend on a couple therapy sessions? Or what would I spend to just keep the doors open at my gym, whether I bother going there or not? And I think about, you know, I might be fine giving $20 a month to NPR, but the base at Kadampa Center is a little bit smaller than that, so I consider things like that. So of that $200,000 that is accounted for during this annual appeal time, less than half of that is from monthly gifts. So a lot of it is from one-time gifts. So we don't have endowments or grants that I know of. We don't. But we have some very generous one-time givers. My husband and I budget our personal budget in a way that is, we set aside, we do like our own little personal tithing. We set aside an amount of our income every month to go towards bigger gifts. He calls it saving for impact. So as things come up throughout the year, whether it's something with a family member or something with a nonprofit or whatever it may be, we like to allocate our money that way. And that's not to say that everybody should do that. Everybody has their own personal methods, but sometimes it's nice to hear people's methods. And then my favorite part actually is this other funds, because getting back to what I'm even trying to do, develop generosity, right? So visiting teachers, Dharma class, memorials, pujas, General Donna, when I have the opportunity to give for a visiting teacher, you guys have come in the door probably for a visiting teacher and seen all these dedications on the door. So a lot of times for me personally, when I give in that way, I spend a little bit more time thinking about my intention, thinking about what my motivation is, writing it down, turning it in, so that I can really probably do a little bit better job with developing the attitude of generosity in my mind. Now, that is not to say I don't have the opportunity every month. I get an email, and I could certainly rejoice at that email that says you gave monthly from Kadampa Center and dedicate the merit. So that'll be an aspiration for 2020. But I think that is my job for today, is to share these kind of big numbers with you and to share what I did. Thank you.
Yeah, that was a tough one to have Aaron come up after. Thank you for being willing to be emotional and share from our heart. We're a very emotional group, aren't we? I cry a lot up here. So my next little piece is to let you know. So Aaron explained it financially. So she did such a great job at saying that you can budget out, talk it over if you're alone or if you're with partners, whatever, how you would like to give to everywhere, you know. But for us, it's kind of cool if you give a little bit monthly, if you give a little bit one time, a little bit to visiting teachers. So we're asking that you think about the ways you might want to give for an entire year and then plan accordingly, because then that helps us plan accordingly. So we need a little extra money in this time of the year, like October. It starts to get a little more difficult because the one-time gifts haven't come in yet, so there's a budget deficit. So some of those one-time gifts, when they start coming in, help out. So that's why your giving helps us plan when you plan your giving. So that's that piece. And then where we are in the appeal. So do you want to do the drum roll to see where we are today? Thank you. Thank you. I keep forgetting to scoot over where they can see us online. So we are at just under $105,000 today. So that's, you can applaud yourself. We're trying to get to $200,000. So as I'm trying to be really open and transparent this year, and $180,000 I told you last week is something that we can kind of get to. It takes a little work, but we can get to, but we always try to get to that $200,000 for our full budget that we have to operate. So as you can see, that's 20 extra thousand that's a little tricky to get in. So we've tried this year with this challenge, and look at the bottom row. Would you like to applaud those people? So these challenges, let me show Geshla. We have four people that came up and said we'd like to give extra funds to support others to give. So one person has already given $5,000 in hopes to encourage three others to give. So we still have some openings there. And one person has given $3,000 to get four other people to be encouraged there. So we have some openings there as well. And one person has given $1,000. He's not here today, but he's given me permission to say, please empty my wallet. So Gary has asked us if we get five to give $1,000, he'll give another $1,000. So he's already given $1,000. And when I asked him to do it, he got out his checkbook and he wrote the check. I mean, that doesn't happen these days because nobody has a checkbook. But he just cut a check and handed it to me. Then one gave $300 to encourage nine others. So we just fulfilled that. I checked email even over this little holiday. And that came in, so that's completed. You can still give $300, though. And then the gifts, the giveaways are, if you do, if by next week is December 8th, everybody who's given me the toggle, you know how I've asked you to tell me that you want to continue your giving, even if you consistently sign up, you could even go in the lobby and just fill out the reply form, yes, I want to continue it where I am or increase, and just drop it in that basket. And then I can add it to the tally, because I can't really assume that you want to do that if you don't tell me. So everybody who does that by December 8th, well, no, let's see, the 5th, Friday, you'll be entered to win two tickets to the Frida Kahlo exhibit. Excuse me. And then by the end of the appeal, I think it's January 5th, you'll be entered to win two tickets to the Tibetan Himalayan gift shop, which I'm sporting today. And then everybody who enters the challenge will be entered to win a trip to Ocracoke. You get to fly. The Strievels will fly you out to Ocracoke. There'll be a $150 gift certificate. And you get to spend it there. So we're giving you a little incentive, a little fun. So just keep on keeping on.
And these can be monthly. You don't have to write
yeah.
Them down. Yeah.
But above your giving, several people have increased their monthly giving, or they've done something like, I'm going to give a couple times here and there to fulfill that pledge. So that's thank you. That's a good way to think about that. So any questions on... If you get into realm two and you don't know what to do, just give me a call. Several people do that. Yeah, and then the four ways of giving we discussed last week. There's so we're going to do mandala offerings this year. We're going to ask Geshe-la to teach us a little bit about that later on, and then the cat will teach how to do mandala offerings, the mudra one, and then we have in-kind donations, which is off the wish list. You got either in the mail or you can see it in the lobby, and then with service with volunteering. And so financial, those are the four ways of giving. Do you have anything else? Okay.
You're never going home. I just wanted to alert you to two really exciting things coming up in the next couple of months. In 3 weeks on Saturday, the 21st of December, a great way to start off your Western holiday season is with a very important Galuk holiday, which is Lama Tsongkhapa Day. And in this particular year, it's very special because it is the 600th year since his passing. And so we're going to do a whole Lama Tsongkhapa Day festival on that day, starting at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And we'll do lots of different prayers and read essential Lama Rim texts. And we're going to bring Lama Tsongkhapa and his disciples down into that wonderful three-tiered altar that we have so we can circumambulate. It's wonderful, great merit if you can come for the whole thing. And if you can't, Geshe-la encourages you to come and do some of it and, you know, deepen our connection with this really quite amazing teacher who is the founder of our lineage. So that starts at 1 o'clock on December 21st. And then the third Saturday in January, which I think is the 18th, we're going to do another Tara mini retreat, and this time we're going to do it a little bit more traditionally. We're going to start before sunup and end after sundown and do the regular four sessions. We've done several Tara mini retreats this year, some of them 2 days, some of them 1 day, and this is going to be just 1 day, but we're going to try to do it. We are going to do it. We will do it. The very traditional way. And then we have another very special celebration for today to welcome Geshe-la back. I think you can all join in. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Geshe-la. Happy birthday to you. Please live long, Geshla. Please live long.